They are the bosses, the ones in charge. The pressure is on them. Hiring, firing, big decisions. It so often all comes down to the person at the top. This week, F1 explains the role of a team principal. Hello, I'm Christian Hugill. This is Katie Osborne.
Thank you, Christian. And yes, this is the official F1 pod dedicated to explaining the sport of Formula One. Now, of course, we love to hear from you, whether it be via email, voice note. Please send them to F1explains@F1.com. Any questions you might have about the sport of Formula One, Christian and I are on it.
Yes, and a reminder, this season we have already explained how teams build their new F1 cars with Aston Martin's Dan Fallows, the Dan Fallows. What goes on at pre-season testing? I went to Bahrain to speak to Oscar Piastri. There's the art of the race start with Mick Schumacher and Bernie Collins, how Drive to Survive is made, and many more. Scroll back and listen to those. And it is important that you hit subscribe for new episodes on your podcast provider every single Friday.
Yeah, you don't want to miss out on anything that F1 Explains is putting out. And Christian, just thinking back to everything you just mentioned that we've already put out this season, it sounds like you've been pretty busy. I feel like all those, there's lots of conversations with you in that mix, and it was really lovely.
What can I say? I get about a bit, Katie. I get about.
That's right. But this week, it's all about the bosses. Listeners, Lily, Ashback in Hong Kong, and Hillary in the U.S. all want to know more about the people up at the top. Later, we're going to hear from Williams team principal, James Vowles. But before that, Christian, my friend, who have you been talking to?
I mentioned a second ago I was in Bahrain. And while I was there, I spoke to the Aston Martin boss, Mike Crack, in the paddock. Katie, I would say you can tell when you're speaking to a team principal because they're not afraid to tell you off. I did get a little bit of a telling off.
yeah, I had that go down.
Well, often before an interview, to sort of check the microphones are working, you might ask a guest to count to 10. That's what I did with Mike.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Let me finish. He asked me to count to 10 and then he stops me.
Excellent. I'd like to apologize.
It's okay.
Like a true team principal, not wanting to be told what to do, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's like, listen, if you give me a task, I want to complete that task. I was fine by 7, but no, he wanted to go to the end.
I was fine at 7. You know, you asked me to do that earlier today too. You get a count to 10, and you know what? You're right. You let me go all the way to 10.
Well, I still hadn't finished when you got to 10. I was checking I could hear you okay, but Mike, it was all good to go. But there we are, some behind the scenes for you.
Anyways, more from Mike in a moment. But first, as Christian said at the start, a team principal is in charge of the team and everyone who works for it. So going back to the early days of F1, team bosses were often the founders. So like you think of Colin Chapman of Lotus and Enzo Ferrari, Bruce McLaren, Frank Williams. They were really important guys who kind of took the team the next level.
Yeah, they were iconic names. And those names have been on the grid for decades. As has Sauber, founded by Peter Sauber. That team, incidentally, had the first female F1 team principal, Manisha Kaltenborn.
Yeah, you know what? I'd love to take a dive further into that for another episode and another time about the female team principal component. But what does a team principal do? Hey, it varies from team to team, and it really depends on how that team's management is organized. You know, a few examples, Christian. Aston Martin, McLaren, and Haas have team principals with engineering or racing backgrounds. So, you know, that might have more input into the sporting side of the team. Those teams all have CEOs like Lawrence Stroll, Zak Brown, Gene Haas. They kind of handle the business side of things, the sponsors, the contracts, all of that kind of good stuff.
Yeah, but it's a bit different at Mercedes. Team principal Toto Wolff is also the CEO. He comes from a business background, so he handles the deals while trusting the talented engineers around him with the design. The team principal oversees the work of the technical director very often, whose focus is the car. A sporting director whose focus is the rule book. They'll also look after many other department heads who are also experts in their fields. And of course, there are hundreds of people in each department. Now, there's no one single skill set you need to be a team principal, but there are many things they all do. If an engineer wants to make huge changes to the car, or if a sponsorship exec wants to sign up a new brand, the team principal will need to approve it. Some will have a key say on which drivers drive for a team, they all do lots of interviews with the media. That's something all principals have in common. And some will talk to their drivers about how to develop the car or get feedback from their technical staff.
Yeah, it's a pretty good rundown. They also oversee the team's budget, $135 million every year. They represent their team in meetings with F1, the FIA, and other teams. We've all seen that on Drive to Survive, of course. They make sure the factory is communicating with the trackside team at the races. And often if a team doesn't move forward, the team principal pays the price with their job, which we've also seen across Drive to Survive and other types of just following along with the sport.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, in modern F1, some team principals become stars in their own right. Gunter Steiner, who was TP at Haas last year, was one of the sport's big characters. And by the way, you can read his column throughout the 2024 season on F1.com. And before Gunter, we had the likes of Eddie Jordan, whose Jordan team were the sort of rock and roll underdogs of F1 throughout the 90s and 2000s.
Christian.
Hello.
Yes. Don't you have some sort of memory associated with Eddie Jordan?
I do. Now, my first ever British Grand Prix, this memory comes from. Katie, have you heard of the British rock band Status Quo?
Okay, I'm terrible with artists connecting their dots with songs. I'm just going to be very clear. Is there a chance I've heard of them and don't actually know who they are?
Possibly. Listen, I'll be honest. They're okay. Not, let's just say, nowadays, they're older gentlemen. That they're not necessarily around as much as they used to be. I don't know if you've heard the song "Rocking All Over the World." That one.
Thank you for but you know, can we get another encore? No, I have not heard of them.
My first ever time at a Formula One race, the 2003 British Grand Prix, and the post-race party. Nowadays, you'll have massive acts like Stormzy and things like that. I think he's playing at Silverstone this year. Back then, it was Status Quo, and guess who came out to play the guitar with Status Quo, much to the delight of the 2003 Silverstone crowd, but Eddie Jordan on the guitar on the Silverstone main stage with legendary rock band, ask your dad if you've not heard of them, Status Quo.
So how did it go down?
In fact, not the guitar. Producer Chris tells me, correcting my own memory, and he is right, it was Damon Hill on the guitar. It was Eddie Jordan on the drums. Katie, I beg your pardon. Eddie Jordan is a drummer.
Here's the thing. It doesn't matter. Eddie Jordan looks like he could be a rock and roller drums guitarist. Doesn't matter. He has the look, feel, vibe of one. So.
And we've said many times that Chris is an F1 guru. Like, me and you know our F1, but Chris is something else. The fact that he could straight away go, wasn't Eddie Jordan a drummer, not a guitarist? That just sums up the man's Formula One knowledge. Anyway.
That's right. That's a nice story. Thank you for adding that.
You're welcome.
I do think I'm more curious how well he did. Seems like he's
the crowd loved it.
Too.
The crowd loved it from what I can remember.
It's really all that matters.
Anyway, enough about Eddie and his guitar/drum work. Onto today's guest.
Now, we mentioned Sauber earlier. My crack actually started in F1 when the team was BMW Sauber back in 2001. All right. But then he decided to work in other racing series like Formula 3, DTM German Touring Cars, the World Endurance Championship, and Formula E. He then returned to the F1 paddock in 2022. I think a lot of people were excited about this as the TP of Aston Martin. And after he finally finished counting to 10 for Christian, he told Christian all about his job.
And I didn't interrupt him again, I can tell you. Mike Crack, welcome to F1 Explains. It's lovely to have you here.
Hello, and we have nice sunshine here in Bahrain. Is that what you expected?
It is what I expected and hoped for, because I do love a bit of sunshine. So
very
I'm
good.
I'm always happy in the sun. Are you happy sitting here in the baking heat talking to me? As happy as you can be?
Yeah, because normally I'm sitting, you know, in the shade or in a dark office, so I need to use every ray of sunshine that I can get.
We're happy to give you that, Mike. We're happy to give you that. You are the team principal of Aston Martin. On F1 Explains this week, we are explaining the role of a team principal. So I'm going to ask you a very broad question to start with. What's the role of a team principal? What's the main role? What's the main job?
Well, I think the main job is to sit on the sofa and answering questions to people like you. That's
anything else is insignificant.
No, the rest is not so important. I think, you know... the first thing that you obviously, you know, you are the representative of the team to the outside world. There is obviously the drivers, but then the drivers, they are representing the team, but also they represent themselves in the first place. And the team principal is a team representative to start with. And then it's obviously different from organization to organization. What is your field of responsibilities? In our case, we have obviously the technical development, the race team, you know, the production side that I look after. And I'm fortunate that I have a huge amount of people, you know, supporting me with this, excellent people that all pull on the same direction, you know, share the same goal. And it's quite easy to do that. And then obviously, you know, you are at all the races, 24 races this year. It's going to be quite challenging, you know, in terms of travel, in terms of, you know, it will be a bit stressful, I think. But yeah, I think that summarizes it.
I often see team principals talking to each other across the paddock. You've got the likes of Toto Wolff at Mercedes, of course. So take Toto, for example. Would his job differ slightly to yours? Would it differ team to team? Or does every team principal in Formula One tend to do the same thing?
You mean talking to each other?
Well, more the job of the team principal, but I guess you all talk to each other.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think I cannot speak for others, obviously. I think some teams, there's team principal and the CEO are in one person. Some teams have the role split. So I think it differs from team to team. And I think who you ask what you hear is depending on who you ask from what team. This is normal because this is how every team has developed differently over the years. Very often when you see them talking to each other, it's about, you know, maybe aligning in terms of meetings, in terms of, you know, which direction does the sport have to go, how does the regulations evolve, you know, or is there something that we share an opinion and we should drive it together, or is there stuff also where we are not agreeing? That's probably one of the reasons why you see them.
Your background personally, Mike, is in obviously Formula One, but also in sports cars, in endurance racing. I just wonder how much that experience across other forms of motorsport helps you in running a Formula One team.
I think it helps a lot. I spent 10 years in Formula One and then I was out for 15 before coming back to the sport. I think having done some other forms of motorsport, also in a different type of organizations, it helps you a lot because, first of all, you realize there is a world outside of one, which is always very important to keep your feet on the ground, that there is not only F1 in the world. And then there is a lot of things you can learn. You know, Formula One is obviously, you know, you push everything to the limit. The amount of budgets involved, the amount of people involved is just extreme in comparison to other projects. But I think you learn in smaller projects, or when you have much more restricted budgets and much less people, to focus on the essential and learn to respect what you have available as a budget. And with the introduction of the budget cap, it's a similar situation. You know, you have to spend efficiently, you have to organize efficiently, you know, because you cannot spend endlessly. So I think from that point of view, it was good to do that, to learn a little bit, you know, how it is in other categories. And maybe another difference is that you might run many, many projects. You know, we ran in my past, we ran in parallel a Formula E, a DTM, and a GT project, GT3 and GT4, for example. So you have a lot of projects running, whereas here is mainly you center, you know, everybody around one single project.
We've got lovely listeners on this podcast, Mike. They're all over the world and they send us our questions, and you can do the same. F1 Explains at F1.com. Can I put a couple of our listeners' questions to you?
Sure.
The first is from Hillary in the USA. Now, Hillary asks, how do teams manage all the regulations and rules? I feel like the rules from staff, guidelines, track procedures, safety regulations to car spec are so controlled and complicated. So how do teams manage this massive set of rules? Is that a team principal's job? What would you say to Hillary, Mike?
Well, I think it's a very good observation from Hillary in the first place. The rule books, directives is very, very vast. It's large and it's also quite complicated and complex. I have to agree. Sometimes you complain it's over-regulated compared to the past. I think, you know, it's only possible because we have the experts in each field. You know, you have a sporting director who manages the sporting regulations. You have the technical director that's the technical. The finance regulations are handled by someone. And, you know, in my case, I'm just responsible that we respect them in the totality. But although being aware of them, you know, you have your specialists that are in the detail of every single word, every single chapter of the specific regulations, and they are very supportive there. You know, if there is a change coming up, normally we brief each other, you know, which direction we have to go, because ultimately I have to sign sign our position, our vote if we change them. But without these experts, it would be impossible to handle all that.
It's really interesting that you have people who know about different stuff across the team, and I suppose your job is pulling them all together and marrying it all up. It's really interesting. Let's go to another listener question. This is from Ashvak from Hong Kong, who wants to know, Mike, where you sit during a race, because he says, I always see Toto Wolff in the garage during the races, whereas other team principals are always at the pit wall. Why is that? So I suppose two parts there, Mike. Why did you team principals sometimes choose differently, and what's your preference?
Well, you know, again, you know, you see, and on this example again, the teams are organized themselves differently. Yeah? There are teams where team principal are in the garage. There are teams where team principals are on the pit wall. You know, the pit wall is quite a hostile environment because it's very noisy. It's very hot. You know, depending on where you are, it could be very cold. So I think, if you want to have the most efficient solution, you go somewhere in an air-conditioned room with all the information that you can have. But then, you know, you need also to interact with the people around you. So we have chosen to be on the pit wall. It's always a historic, you know, it has been like that in this team when I joined, and I'm comfortable with it. The difference that I think that I make is that I'm not sitting. I'm normally standing because I'm more focused when I'm standing.
Now, your drivers tend to behave themselves very well. They help each other out on track. We even saw, I think it was Miami last year, where I spoke to Fernando after the race, after he'd been looking on the big screens in Miami and saying something in the strategy that could help Lance, which is just fantastic. The many wonders of Fernando Alonso. But not every team principal's as lucky. We've seen in the past, in Formula One's long history, drivers bickering with each other, getting into on-track squabbles. It's not a problem you luckily have at the moment, is it? But if it were to happen, how would you go about dealing with that as a team principal? I think it's one of the questions that we get asked the most on F1 Explains.
Okay, that's interesting. So, yeah, I think, you know, first of all, I think you're right. You know, with Lance and Fernando, we have extremely mature drivers that do not see themselves in the center of everything, but see the team as in the center. And I think that is the main difference from our team to others. They are team players, and they know what role they have to play in the whole game. Whereas in other teams, I think the drivers are maybe a bit more selfish than we have. So, yeah, if you have such a situation, you know, I think we look for dialogue all the time. You know, we want to have our drivers in a good place. We want to be transparent and honest with them. You know, it's also a matter of respect. So it's quite important that we know before we go on, before we hit the track, we know how we deal with each other. And you know, you need to spend the time in doing that. I think, again, you know, we are very fortunate with the two drivers that we have, that they have understood the objectives of the team, what we are aiming for, and who our competitors are. The competitors are not one against the other. The competitors are the cars in red, the cars in orange, the car in whatever color. That is something that they have understood, and that makes our task much, much easier.
You don't strike me, and I could be wrong here, and I'm sure you'll tell me if I am, but you don't strike me as a, to use an old football reference, the hairdryer approach, where certain football managers would shout and scream at their players if they wanted to tell them off. You strike me as someone that would try and fix those relations in a more calm manner. Is that your style?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a calm person.
Yeah.
You know, normally I'm not shouting. My son would probably tell you something else because he knows which buttons to trigger, which no race driver has ever managed so far to trigger.
It's a unique skill to your son, is it?
Yes. Normally is a skill that you have with your close family, isn't it? I think, you know, I think shouting is the second best option. I think, you know, shouting is that is you start to shout when you run out of arguments.
Sure.
And I think, you know, we are mature grown up people that should be able to discuss issues and take decisions from it, understand each other's position and then move on. I don't think we should shout.
Lily has a related question on this, Mike. Lily asks, so when two drivers from different teams crash, their teams contact the FIA stewards to try and get their rivals penalised if they feel that their rivals are at fault. So Lily's question is, if two drivers from the same team crash, does the team principal get a say on whether one of those drivers gets a penalty?
Yeah, that is an interesting bit, isn't it? You know, when these different colours clash, there is a huge issue. But if it's the same colours, everybody is fine with it somehow, and you don't want to talk about it. It's in our case, and I think it's in most of the cases, you have someone liaising to the FI, which is not the team principal, which is the sporting director. He has the right connection there, and he can speak to race control during the race. But on the other hand, also, we need to trust the FIA. They have a job of doing this. And if you complain about others consistently, I think, you know, we should try to be fair sportsmen. You know, it's a hard battle on track. But, you know, on the other hand, I think, you know, it's also a sport with some fairness rules that I think should be respected. Now, not everybody sees it the same, but we are normally not trying to highlight penalties to opponents unless there is something really obvious, in which case we do an official protest. But it is not that we are on the radio button to raise control all the time.
Now, one thing I'm aware of in Formula One is that there is, and this fascinated me when I first found this out, is that there's a driver's WhatsApp group with the 20 drivers in it. I love this. I'd just love to be a fly on the wall of that conversation. It'd be fascinating.
I don't think so. I don't think you should. I don't think it's that interesting.
Why? I think it would be. Do you not? Or do you, what, do you think they're all a bit boring?
I think we would be bored quite quickly. Sorry, but I hear I interrupted you.
No, not at all. I just wonder if there's a team principals one. I know there's a driver's one, but are there 10 team principals in a WhatsApp group together?
I think there was one, actually, a while ago. But it has, you know, the ones that were managing it or communicating most on that one, I think they're not there anymore. So I think it has died.
Right, so it needs to be fired back up. Okay, well, team principals, if you're listening, there's a challenge for you. Another listener question here.
I won't do it, just to let you know, I will not be the administrator of the team principal WhatsApp group.
Why is that?
Because I have a job to do.
Yeah, that seems fair. You don't want to be managing that lot, do you? You don't want to. No, it's just, I totally relate to that. Another listener question here from an unnamed listener who asks us, there are obviously a lot of drivers up and down the grid who are in the final year of their contracts. Is it a team principal's job to negotiate contract extensions with drivers or sign new drivers from other teams? So is that your job, Mike? Or is that something we were talking earlier about you having people with different skills in other roles of the organisation. Is that something that you delegate, or is that something you're hands-on in?
Again, it's different in each team. I have a supporting role in this, in our team. So I'm aware of the situation. I'm aware of the negotiations. I'm part of some of the discussions. But then again, you know, you have a team of legal. The drivers have a team of legal advisors, you know, so not... You are not part of all the conversations, but I think, you know, what is important that is that we have the same vision of what we want to have, what we want to achieve in terms of drivers and for the future. And when these discussions are finished and we have defined, you know, a common target, and it's various people that are collaborating in that process.
Formula One teams are so big, and I've been to the Aston Martin campus near Silverstone, which is this huge place, and
it's nice, yeah?
It's lovely, absolutely lovely, but so many people, and it just strikes me, looking from the outside in, that a team principal's job must be quite stressful. So question one, is it that stressful, and two, how much do you enjoy it? Do you enjoy your job?
Yeah, it is very enjoyable. And the stress that you have is the one that you make yourself.
Sure.
You know, I touched it a little bit earlier. I'm very fortunate, you know, there is very, very good people around me, you know, in the various departments, be it technical, be it sporting, finance, operations. You know, the people are just amazing, you know, and they all manage their areas very, very well. And at the end of the day, it is more like, you know, the cross-management of the functions, you know, like... that they talk to each other, you know, that they have the same goal, that we are aligned on where we want to go. That is one of the things that I'm doing. But the stress, you know, is is there. Obviously, you know, you have to perform. We are results orientated, and if the results are not there, it is my responsibility, obviously, and I will have to stand up for it. This creates stress, but then again, you need to be careful that these kind of stressful situations, you manage them properly. Again, the people below you, or the people that are working on different areas of the car, you know, they are trying to do their best. They are working hard every day. They're making parts, and you know, you need to provide an environment where they can do their job properly. You know, you have to absorb this kind of stress or this kind of pressure, and try not to relate it into the company or into the business, because it has a paralyzing effect at the end of the day. You know, you need to create an environment where everybody just can focus on his job.
I'm imagining that, you know, at every level of Formula One, stress could exist, because it's, by its very nature, you know, the world's best coming together, and the drivers are under pressure and your staff are under pressure. But I suppose there must be an element of remembering to enjoy it and learning how to manage that stress, because everybody gets into motorsport because they love it. Very few people are forced into motorsport like other jobs. So it's nice to hear that you take time to try and enjoy it and enjoy this brilliant but mad roller coaster that is the Formula One world and Formula One life.
Well, I think you touch on one of the most important points of all, you know, is enjoying it. Yeah, I try to highlight this also to all our staff regularly, that the reason why we came into this environment was because we are passionate about it, and we like it, and we you know, we are here because we love that job. And there's not so many people in the world that can say, you know, I do this job because I love it. Yeah, and that is something that we should always, you know, we're sitting now here in the sun, you know, in Bahrain doing a job. Yeah, we're fortunate and privileged to do that, you know, and we should also be conscious about it and enjoy it. And I think also personally, I think, you know, the more you enjoy your job, the better you do it, the more motivated you are, and also the less stressed you get about it.
What advice would you give to anyone listening to this who's on the younger side, who thinks, I might like to go into motorsport management, but, you know, obviously you have to work your way up. It's not like, say, I want to be a team principal straight away, but anybody who thinks...
I never wanted to be a team principal, by the way.
Really?
No, not really.
Did something change when obviously you're offered a job?
Yeah, you know, your career develops, and then opportunities sometimes arise that you were not expecting, or that you were not even trying to follow, and then, yeah, you think that might be something interesting, and do it. Sometimes career develop weirdly.
So what did you want to do?
My target was always to be a race engineer. And I managed to do that for a couple of years. I love to do it. Then you get promoted, and, you know, it was nice as well. And don't get me wrong, but, you know, if I had to choose a dream job when I was like 18 or 20, it was to be a race engineer.
So what advice would you give to anyone who thinks they might fancy a career in motorsport management?
Well, the most important is to do it because you want to do it. Yeah,
sure.
You love to do it. It is not for the glamour. It is not for these interviews or for any kind of pictures, because it is hard work that you have to love. And I think if you're passionate, the other thing you have to do is being persistent. You know, you will get turned down. You will apply to jobs and you will get turned down, and you will get turned down again. I was turned down many times.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think if you are persistent and you try to get into it, you know, go with lower categories or whatever, work your way up, and if you really want to achieve it, you will get there.
Mike, fascinating to talk to you. Really interesting insight into the role and life of a team principal. Really appreciate it. And I hope that while the interviews aren't the main reason for the job, I hope it's not too unenjoyable.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you.
Take care, Mike. Thank you.
Christian, overall, big picture, scale of 1 to 10, how was it talking with Mike?
Well, interesting scale of 1 to 10. I'm certainly not going to say 7 or 8 because he'd correct me and go to 10, wouldn't he?
Yeah, just go straight
10
to 10.
10 out of 10. I love speaking to Mike Crack. He's a fascinating man, a proper deep thinker, a very nice man as well. Dry sense of humour, funny, lovely to talk to. It is a pleasure being able to sit down and speak to Mike. So yeah, really, really enjoyed it. And great insight as well.
Lots of good insight, and obviously has helped move the needle for Aston Martin as well. And Christian, we know there are 20 F1 drivers, but only 10 team principals. That's really an exclusive job, and these guys really do have to move the needle in order to stay in their role.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to hear from another one of those team principals in just a minute.
Welcome back to F1 Explains. And we've already talked a lot this week about how a team principal's job is different to other roles in the team, but also how they have so many different backgrounds. I'm blown away with that. James Vowles was head of strategy at Mercedes before stepping into the top job at Williams. He started his second season in charge there, aiming to return the team to its former glory.
It's Pastor Maldonado ahead of Fernando Alonso and down at Williams with their first Grand Prix victory since Juan Pablo Montoya in 2004.
Montoya wins the Brazilian Grand Prix. Ralf Schumacher, though, wins the Malaysian Grand Prix. A fantastic victory for Williams, for BMW, and for Ralf Schumacher.
Jack Villeneuve, second, settles for third place at the World Championship of 1997.
And look at the joy, the unbounded joy in the Williams area with their new world champion, Jack Villeneuve from Canada. From second on the grid, he passed Jack Villeneuve, he took the lead, he stayed there, and Damon Hill exits the chicane and wins the Japanese Grand Prix. And I've got to stop because I've got a lump in my throat.
Those are the glory days. And can you even imagine what would happen if Williams won a race, a Grand Prix, let's say here in 2024? Can you imagine how wild that would be?
Hey, we're due in F1 a sort of barking that
due
result. So it could happen. Yeah, it's been too long since Williams won a Grand Prix. I think we'd all love to see them back on top of the podium. Fascinating fact, I didn't realise this. The team's only had 14 principals in its 50-year history. The late, great Sir Frank Williams.
Wow.
Yeah, amazing. His daughter, Claire, Jost Capito, and now James Vowles.
And James does have an interesting story. He started to take on more responsibility in his old job at Mercedes, but now at Williams, he's working to make sure different parts of the team are communicating. I kind of like that model, right? That may have been what they were missing. Here's James chatting to F1's Tom Clarkson on the F1 Beyond the Grid podcast.
What about the job of team principal? Just how different is it to what you were doing at Mercedes, where you were motorsport strategy director?
My role migrated across the last few years when I was there to really start taking on more and more responsibilities that are very akin to what I'm doing here. Not the full breadth, but very akin to it. And I was fortunate. Toto gave me more and more responsibilities, I'd say month by month, really. Drivers fell underneath me, both race drivers. Originally, it was, for example, just young drivers. Then it was young drivers plus sim drivers, young drivers, sim drivers, race drivers. You get the idea. It just grew over time for that whole area, really, to start falling underneath me. I had a team of strategists there that were doing all of that hard work. I had oversight of it, but they were doing the hard work day to day. And it migrated more to a role where we were looking at Formula One as a whole, what we want across the next 5 years. What do we want Concorde to look like? What do we want 2026 to look like? How do we shape the regulations that helps the sport? What do we want our other organizations to be? How does GT3 fit into it? How do we use a driver pool in and around that? What does Formula E look like? Does that fit in? Do we need it? What are the structures? Is it profitable? And they were all sort of areas that I had contact points on, and I enjoyed that. It was good to be really involved in the wider scope of motorsport. Now, obviously, that doesn't train you day to day for what Williams is and the requirement for the TP here. When you come here, what we also needed was there's a lack of technical direction. So it needs someone in place that understands how to put that in without, as you described it, a technical director or otherwise in place. And it's different as a result of that. I was fortunate in Mercedes to be a part of something that was called the TMM. Effectively, it's the technical management structure that's there. But there's about six of us or so, and it was a good group of individuals discussing the technical direction of the organization. So I was able, through that and through other experiences, to gain some concepts and ideas on how to be running this organization. But the TP role here is one that I think is very, very different, for example, to one that's a Mercedes, just simply because this one, the breadth of it is largely across all parts of the organization, technical as well, in some level of depth.
Do you have a separate CEO here? Because it seems there are two different ways of doing it in Formula One. Toto, Christian Horner at Red Bull are team principal and CEO, whereas other team structures, you have a team principal and a separate CEO. What do you think works best? What are you going to do here?
Pros and cons are both. We don't have a CEO here, but I have an incredible, what I would call, management committee. It's not many people, but we have someone focused on the HR side. We have someone focused on the operations side. We have someone focused on the revenue side. And we have someone focused on the financial side. Filling the role effectively as CEO, all coming together once a week. My link with the board is very close as well. It'd be unusual in a day if we haven't spoken five times. So it's not a typical board in the way you would normally think about things. And as a result of that, I don't think a CEO is required within this organization at the moment because there's very close contact with things.
And how does your previous experience as an engineer help you? Because when you look at the grid as a whole, there are a lot of former engineers now in the role of team principal. You know, Andrea Stella at McLaren, Mike Crack at Aston Martin, and now you here at Williams. Does it help?
If you look at what the team principal's doing, you're trying to run every, at least have an overview of every part of the business, from commercial income, in other words, how you market yourself, what your brand looks like. And from that perspective, you have what I would call another generation of team principals. Toto, who is leading the march on that one. Then also, that's just one small part of the company, though. The other part of the company is production. The other part of the company is performance, design, build. You need someone that has an overview of all of those. And all you're seeing is someone could be more expert in one area than another. I think what I bring to the party, both from my experience at Mercedes, but also from other organizations that I had links with fundamentally and companies I had links with, I understand finance, HR and business from those as a result of it. The engineering side, I'd be the first to tell you I'm not the best engineer on the grid. I have a very good ability to understand what's going on, dissect it and present it in a way that is easy to understand. But there's far better aerodynamicists than I am and technical directors than I am. My skill is more being able to work with all of those individuals, bring the right individuals together at the same time and discuss and present a direction of travel because I have a good enough understanding of where we're going. As to whether or not that's going to be the modern way Formula One goes, I think certainly it works for Williams in the structure we have today and the direction of travel that we're in. It may not work as well within other organizations where they have huge technical strength.
A great conversation between Tom Clarkson and James Vowles. Thank you for that. You can catch the full chat by searching for F1 Beyond the Grid and F1's other official pod, F1 Nation. You know, Christian, we mentioned it earlier. F1.com is keeping an eye on all things from the paddock, from a team principal perspective, with a new column from the very, very popular ex-Haas team boss, Gunther Steiner.
Hello to whoever at F1.com is having to edit out Gunther swearing. Good luck to them. Now, we've had so many emails this season. A quick hello to Mike in Port Byron, New York, Michael in Missouri, another Michael in Melbourne. Oh, God, here we go. Now, I really do struggle with place names. Katie, Mark in...
Calgary. With another Mark, but Mark with a C in Calgary.
So, right, so we've got Mark with a K in Calgary, Mark with a C in Calgary, which is a Canadian city, I've just learnt. Mark in Utah, different Mark. I mean, if you're called Mark, you're very welcome to listen to this podcast. Michelle in LA, Maria in Arizona, Maya in Stockholm, Sweden, Melissa in Germany, and Margie in the Netherlands. Now, congratulations if you guessed that today's emails were brought to you exclusively by the letter M in honor of our guest, Mike Crack. If your name begins with another letter of the alphabet, we'll give you a shout out next time. Now, staying with emails.
Fun.
Thanks. Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Now, Katie, do you remember a few weeks ago when Alex Jakes and Jolyon Palmer, we all didn't know where the term pole position
right.
came from.
Yep, that was a fascinating chat. You can listen back to that one on our rapid fire episode.
Well, we eventually learned it came from horse racing, thanks to Richard in Sheffield in the UK and Jonathan. They both emailed to let us know that. Thank you, guys. Now, we also had this brilliant email about it from Jorge in Portugal. Jorge, we're presuming that's how you pronounce your name. It also might be George. Whoever you are, hello. Now, Jorge or George said, thinking on the ye olde times of armies and their marching bands, the flag bearers usually are positioned at the front in the place of prominence. The flag being on a pole mast and the position being well defined at the front may be at the core of the pole position name. Jorge or George goes on to say, this has no backing whatsoever. I just thought it made sense. Katie, that's my favourite type of fact, where we don't actually know it's the case. It just sounds good. I love that.
And it not only sounds good, but when said with confidence, it backs it even further. So welcome to F1 Explains, where we try to tell you factoids that may or may not be true, but we say them with confidence and we bring them in from all over the world. So yes, exactly. There you have it. It's been a great episode. Talk to you next time.
Brilliant. I don't know if that's the case, but we've decided it is. Excellent. Good.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jorge George from Portugal. That is really fascinating. We are back next week with true facts and uncovering some questions for you in the world of Formula One. Send us your questions to F1 Explains at F1.com. Bye for now.
Bye then.